you need help. I don't need to know anything about your business, but I know you need help because you've got a big dream and you want to grow your business bigger. And in order to do that, you need a bigger team. But the question is, where do you find good help? How can you justify paying for help if your business isn't making as much money as you'd like it to? How do you write job descriptions for virtual help? What are the best sites to find quality help? What virtual interview techniques will help guarantee you land the best talent? And what about negotiating pay? How do you know if the person you're hiring is actually capable of doing the job you need them to do? And if you know you need help, but you just don't even know what area of your business to start in first, you're in luck. As they say, sharing is caring. And today I'm going to share our secret weapon with you. I think the number one reason why people aren't able to like launch their thing or have a successful side hustle or really even scale their business the way that they need to is because they really struggle to know what is my niche. And people think that niche is their industry. Well, like I'm in fitness, that's my niche. No. That's an industry. Even if you were to say I'm a personal trainer, well, that's a subcategory of an industry. But your niche is something very specific. It is specifically what you do within that category, within that industry, that is unique and nuanced to you. And people are so afraid to do this because they think if I niche down too much, well, then aren't I going to exclude certain customers? I'm telling you, you need to niche down. And if you know that too, but you've struggled with it, I want to invite you to do a workshop style training that myself and Brock have created that literally walks you through the questions you need to ask yourself. And we give you enough time to answer those questions so you can fully understand, like really drill it down and get really clear about your niche, who it is you serve, how it is you're different, what makes you unique. This is what's going to take your business, your side hustle, whatever it is, to the next level. This workshop is free and it shouldn't be, because it's one of the most valuable things that you can walk through. It's one of the most valuable things you can identify. You can attend this training for free right now by going to instaclubhub.com/niche, N-I-C-H-E. Again, that's instaclubhub.com/niche. And do yourself a favor when you're watching this, make sure you have a pen and a piece of paper and no distractions, because this is a next level training. Again, instaclubhub.com/niche. Today, I'm interviewing the vice president of Team Johnson, Michelle Puccinelli. And I have to say, in my 30 years of business, I don't think that I've ever met someone as strategic, as skilled, and as systematized when it comes to finding exceptional people that fit our culture, but maybe even more importantly, they're very qualified, they're the right people at the right price. And I can't even tell you what a difference it has made in our business and my overall happiness. Just the joy of working with this group of individuals, the stress level that goes down when you've got the right people in the right positions. And remember, this isn't necessarily all full-time people. We're going to talk about consultants and agencies and hiring, all of the best practices. You are in luck. Make sure you've got a pen and a piece of paper. This may be one of the most valuable episodes that you will have heard on Build Your Tribe in a long time. So I want to commend you, instead of searching for another episode on how to grow your social media, you've found the episode that is going to help you grow your business. Without further ado, Michelle Puccinelli. Michelle, so excited to have you share your wisdom with the Build Your Tribe audience.
Yeah, I'm super excited to be here. You know, I mean, I am always on the back end of everything, so it's kind of fun to, you know, check it out from the other side.
Well, we had to first secure you, like really like secure the bag before we shared your wisdom with the world for fear that people would try to snatch you away from us.
Well, we're exclusive now. We're in a real relationship.
That's true. And you're like our secret weapon. And so today people are really in for a treat because you're going to share the thing that I think can make or break most businesses. I think this is the number one reason why a lot of entrepreneurs end up like stuck at a cap, like stuck at maybe it's earning 200,000 or maybe, you know, it's that just barely about to hit the six figure mark. But if you're going to go from six figures to seven figures and from seven figures, hopefully to eight figures, it's all about team and it's a skill. So I'm really excited to be able to share your process. I want to start with, how is it your experience? do you feel led you to a place where you're like, I kind of understand how to find them and where to find them and what to ask them?
Yeah, I do think a big part of it is because I've been on the other side in all capacities. Mm. I've been a full-time employee for like the government. I've been a part-time employee for a big corporation. I've been a contractor. I've been a business owner. So I think because I've seen all sides of that lens and I was a team member, an employee, a contractor for so long, I often feel like I know kind of what it's like to be in the shoes of those people, both on the other side of the interview, but also the team members who are doing the stuff day to day that's making all of the big stuff happen. So I do think that that's a big part of it, is because I've, you know, had that full breadth of experience. The other part of it, though, is I think that when you approach your team members with a servant's heart, when your whole goal is to make their lives better, more efficient, more joyful to come to work, more joy gets poured into the work that they do, which then, you know, contributes to this wonderful machine that we have going here at Team Johnson.
Let me ask, how does that relate to the hiring process? Like, how are you exemplifying that in your methodology of finding the right people?
Yeah, I think it starts with knowing that there are humans on the other side of these applications. So one thing I feel very strongly about is that everybody gets a response from me. So I have, you know, an admin who helps me do some of the vetting and stuff like that. But if it's a no, you're going to hear from us. If it's a you're moving on to the next step, you're going to hear from us. So I think that is a huge part of the process in helping people feel safe. Knowing going into a new organization can always feel a little bit scary, but knowing that the other person on the side, you know, respects your time and is going to get back to you, and you know that they're part of a well-oiled machine, I think that helps a lot. The application and kind of job posting thing is so crucial. That job posting that you put out into the world is so important because it gives people your vibe, and it's going to attract, hopefully, the right people who want to fit into that culture as well. So if you're doing like a super boring, bland job posting, that's going to be the people that you get apply.
Let me circle back to the everyone gets a reply. Let's assume that you've done a job posting for something that's really popular. You get over 300 applicants. Are you replying to every single applicant who submits an inquiry, or are you only replying to those people who you've had a conversation back and forth with?
Every single person. And we're utilizing all the same tools and tricks that we use in the business. We have automations. I have text expanders. I have all sorts of really great things that allow me to just put people in buckets. And then my admin helps me. But we do reply to every single application to let them know where they are.
Let's start people at the beginning. So I'm overwhelmed. I'm a solopreneur. I know I need help. I need help in so many areas. And I feel like one of the common mistakes that a solopreneur makes is they think they're going to find this one person who can do all of those things. And I know this is broad, but like, let's say we're talking to that solopreneur. They're doing so many of the admin things, the editing, they're learning how to code. They're doing all the things. Who's the first person they need to hire?
Ooh, I think a really good VA who has a little bit of maybe social experience is a great place to start. And when I say social experience, I don't mean they're not a social media manager, and you should not expect them to be a social media manager. But if they can go on and engage as you on your social media accounts, reply to comments, they can maybe help process DM requests that are coming through. They're just kind of watching your account for you. A lot of entrepreneurs aren't actually that great at the like social side and the content creation side. So having a really great VA who can be watching that for you and kind of helping free up that brain space gives you a couple hours back into your week that you can then put to good use doing those big CEO things that only you can do.
I think a lot of entrepreneurs worry about like, okay, if I've got to hire someone, now I'm responsible to give them full-time work, benefits, hiring, firing, all those things. So I know that we're big fans of letting people work virtually, finding people who can, you know, plug holes. These aren't necessarily employees. Can you help us understand, like, what's the definition of somebody who you would bring on as an employee and versus someone who could be a contractor or a virtual assistant or someone who's doing project work?
Yeah. So I think most, especially solopreneurs or brand new entrepreneurs, you're going to start with contractors. Don't get hung up on thinking you need to hire a full-time 40-hour a week employee, because that's going to hold you back. The Amen. Power of contractors is that you are finding people who are specialized and highly skilled in their thing. It doesn't matter what it is. It could be a super evolved IT position down to somebody doing some admin tasks. But whoever you're finding, they're really good at that one thing. So there's a couple of important distinctions. A contractor is somebody who you're not paying employment taxes or FICA taxes or providing benefits to them. So you don't have any of that. So oftentimes it means that you can actually offer them a slightly higher rate than you would an employee, because you're not having to pay all that extra stuff. They have to pay it themselves. Mm-hmm. So in my opinion, this is actually one of the best ways to get top talent is to seek out contractors, because you are giving them a higher rate. And oftentimes these are people who are supplementing maybe an employee wage that they have going on, or they've got multiple clients or whatever it is. But I think it's just a really great way of like tapping into little bits of tasks that need to get done. And so for project-based contractors, these are often ones that you're just doing a one-time scope of work. You agree to a project-based fee, the contractor completes it, and then you can walk away. Long-term contractors, you're going to be building more of a relationship. And these are the ones that you're going to want to invest in for positions that are really hard to train for, essentially, right? So like a copywriter, because it is difficult for them to learn your voice, to learn your style, to figure out your brand products and specifications. So to constantly try to hire and find a new copywriter for every single copywriter thing you may have is going to take a lot of time. But if instead you can find somebody who is either going to be on retainer, which means you pay them upfront and they are then available to you for a certain amount of hours, or somebody that you know you can tap on whenever you have a project and you keep going back to that same person, that's going to be the best way to utilize the hours that you spent finding them.
How do you recommend writing that first job posting where there's so much you need this person to do? And, you know, even if you could find someone that could do like 50% or 75% of the things you've listed, it would be a win. Especially those things like, probably a lot of people could do these things. They're not highly skilled. A lot of administrative things. It's like taking these little things off of your plate. How would you write a job posting that gave you some leeway, some flexibility?
That is a really great question. I think everybody should always start asking themselves what their ideal candidate is first, which includes things like soft skills and personality traits. Write that out, kind of vision board that. And then you'll kind of know what are your musts and what are your wants. And so if you can categorize those things both on skills, so you know, maybe my must is must know how to do QuickBooks, must be able to use Asana, must be able to use Slack, but would be nice to have somebody who has experience using Dropbox or whatever it is. If you can break those two things up, then you can put both of them into a job posting and you can let people know, if you don't have these things, don't bother. Please don't apply. These are deal breakers. If you have these are going to help your application stand out in front of the crowd.
Is there a specific formula? I mean, I know it changes depending on whether, you know, the level of help that it is we need. And I know it certainly will change based on the personality and the culture of each person's business and what type of people you want to attract. But is there like a kind of a template or a formula where you could help people say like, start with this, then go to that?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it starts with a summary, right? Because people are going to get really bored. I can't tell you how many job postings I've seen where the first three paragraphs are telling about the company and don't make any mention of the job or the ideal candidate. It's just about the company. It's some boring copy paste from the website. Scratch that. You don't need that. The first three sentences should be a really punchy title about the job itself. Kind of think of this like marketing, right? This is your header. This is the top hero section where you're able to attract somebody's attention. Just as much as you are looking for an ideal candidate, they're looking for you too. And if you have a crappy job posting, you're going to miss out on a lot of the talent. So utilize that space.
When you say a punchy heading, how important is it there that you're using words and terms that someone who's looking for a particular type of work is, and because I've seen some really creative job posting headings where I'm like, but no one's knows what that means.
Exactly. So don't use jargon. Please stop calling everybody a unicorn. Like that, that's not helpful to anybody. It yeah. needs to be a description of the job and then like maybe your top two skills. So for example, if we're looking for a copywriter and we really need them to be skilled in sales copy, we would say something like, wanted, a really witty sales copywriter who understands how to write for women over 40, right? We're just kind of condensing into what are the most important deal breakers that we need this person to have.
I love that. It's also, you're really identifying what it is you're looking for. So already somebody who's like, oh, I'm a witty copywriter, but I don't know anything about the way or what a woman over 40 is interested in reading or her language, et cetera. So you're weeding, you're niching down your audience, which I really love.
Exactly. Yep, exactly.
Do you recommend, you know, when I first started doing this online, right? Like when I was going to different websites, I would often start by reading other people's job postings and stealing like little lines. How helpful is that?
Super helpful for the like details. So for example, we had to hire a full stack developer. My goodness, that is not my skill. So I went on and I stole, in fact, I ChatGPT'd it first. And then I went on and I stole a whole bunch of like the bulleted parts of what these people do because I don't speak that language.
Yeah.
The right ideal candidate speaks that language and they're going to know what all of those little things mean in the like specific requirements, detailed task listings. But I think going on and getting inspiration from a myriad of places is a really good idea.
I'm so glad you just said that. I want to get back to this formula. We've started with the heading. We've gone to a summary. We've talked about some of those bullets, but my ADHD won't let me let go of this question. How do you interview someone like a full stack developer when you're the first person they're going to come across and you're like, I don't even know what these words mean? How do you know if the person you're interviewing actually has the chops?
Yeah, that's a really great question. And a lot of it comes from you are going to have to do some prep before you interview. You just are. At this point, I have been, you know, running the operations for you guys for a long time that I have a pretty good language for most of the stuff now. Yeah. But the first time I interviewed a developer, I had to Google stuff and I had to watch a couple YouTube things and figure out which coding language was absolutely needed. So then basically I'm just like listening for those little buzzwords that I've heard from my research ahead of time and just making note of it. But the real test is an actual test. We do test projects with everybody that we hire because it has been the difference between somebody that we thought was amazing who turned out to be kind of a dud.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so we're going to get to those test projects because I've been a big believer in those from day one. You know, as soon as it became apparent to me that not everyone I needed to bring on was a full-time person, that's just a game changer. So please stay tuned, you guys, that this is going to blow your mind. Let's go back to that formula. We've got the heading, we've got the summary, we've got some bullet points. What else is in that formula that you use for a job posting?
Yeah. Okay. Header, summary. And then you do need to have a little bit of an about us, right? So people kind of get a gist for what the company is. And then you're going into your must-haves and your would-be nices. So must-haves are the very specific skills. And this can include soft skills and hard skills. So if you know that you need somebody who is highly organized because you're hiring for a project manager, they have to be detailed, organized, very communicative. Those are all soft skills, but they're a requirement. So put them in the required skill set. And then you can have the would be nice to haves.
Okay.
After that, we pretty much go straight to the application process. I don't think there's necessarily a whole lot of other fluff that needs to be added as long as you're very, very clear in those must-haves, would be nice to haves, and your summary.
Do you have a trick or something you like to use for that job posting where you know you're going to get inundated with copy and paste replies and just a way to kind of weed through those to see who's actually reading the full posting and who's just like, you know, mass replying to hundreds of postings?
I do. I have a couple of tricks. The first is that I don't accept any applications on any of those job posting sites. So Indeed, LinkedIn, because those are way too easy to just hit quick apply, quick apply, quick apply. Those are garbage. We don't use those. I actually have people directly email me, and then we go through all of those applications. You could also set up a Google form or something like that. But I also don't ask typically for a resume in the application. I ask for it later in the process. But again, a cover letter or a resume are really easy to just send the generic template that you've been sending out to a million people. So instead, we ask some really specific questions, like, question number one, tell me what you've been doing for the past 5 years and the experiences that lead you to apply for this job. Question number two, and then maybe it's like a technical question about the position. Question number three, what's your current availability and client workload? Something like that, that they have to read the question and ask it. And then we're pretty harsh in the vetting. If people do not very clearly follow those instructions, they get a rejection, because if they can't follow application instructions, there's a pretty good chance they're not going to be able to follow through on instructions on the task for our team.
So are you using that same process when you're using a freelancer site like Upwork?
Yeah.
Okay. Ask questions. A lot of times what I would do is almost put in a, you must reference your favorite song in the first sentence of your reply, something. So I put that at the bottom to make sure, okay, if this person doesn't have enough attention to detail to read all the way to the bottom, they've just eliminated themselves. And it's crazy how few people actually have that kind of attention to detail on those kinds of sites.
Yeah, it's amazing. I mean, honestly, it helps us weed through 90 to 95% of all applications.
Mm. Where are your favorite places right now? I know this changes all the time, but where, and maybe you can break it down like according to what type of staff you're looking for, but where are your favorite sites right now?
Yeah. So if you were looking for a project-based contractor, you cannot beat Upwork. It is, in my opinion, the absolute best. Fiverr is all right. I think the talent is better on Upwork, in my opinion. And then for longer-term contractors, freelancers who are going to be with you, and then if you're looking for employees, I'm really digging Indeed right now. I think it's one of the best ones. ZipRecruiter is also fantastic, but it is expensive.
Yeah.
And then actually LinkedIn is still a really great place. So if you have a decent profile on LinkedIn, then posting jobs there can be a really great place as well.
Michelle, I had a conversation with one of our Marketing Impact Academy students the other day. She's got a super successful business. I mean, she's doing like gross over $6 million. And she said, I want to sell the business. I need to do something different. I said, why? She said, I'm just so overwhelmed. I'm so stressed out. I have all the wrong people in place. And so it's almost like she wants to sell the business to escape. And what I shared with her was her poor hiring practices. Like she doesn't want to be CEO. She doesn't want to do anything with operations or to be the president or any of those things. She wants to come up with the great ideas. And for a role like that, this is a heavy hire. This is a big dog. Would you recommend someone like that use possibly a recruiting agent, or would you go through the same process? And I'm going to preface this one step further by saying she's already has a track record of not being great at hiring.
Oh man, that is so tricky, because ideally that position is coming from within people you're already like aware of and working with. I think that's a really, really hard external hire, because you essentially have to trust them with a big part of your business. So I think that's a really, really tricky one. Mm-hmm. I think the runway for a position like that would have to be really long. There would have to be a long courting process.
Just vetting. You're putting your baby in someone else's hands. It's a big chunk of change. And I wanted to bring this up because I think there's a lot of entrepreneurs out there who are super creative and they've found something that's profitable, but they're killing the profits because they just don't know how to hire and they don't want to run the business and they need somebody to step in and run the business. And that's a big hire. But like I said to her, wouldn't you spend like $200,000 on a salary or $300,000 if it could take you to that 8-figure mark? And she's like, absolutely, all day long. I'm like, well, then spend the time. And my personal recommendation, and maybe it's because I know this person, I think she needs to hire a headhunter and someone to do that for her. I don't know that everyone knows their own shortcomings, you know? And I've never used that process. Well, actually, we have used that process before, but it's expensive. It's very expensive.
Yeah. And the tricky thing with headhunters these days too, and recruiters, we saw a ton of them getting let go from all that crazy startup tech boom that happened in 2020 and 2021. So many of them lost their positions that they're not always working at your best interest. I find they're often coaching candidates to say things to secure the job.
Yeah. Oh man.
It can be a little tricky, I think. But I mean, it's not obviously, don't come for me, recruiters. I know that there's a lot of really amazing ones out there, but it's such a deeply personal thing that I think it would be really hard. I do think that there are operators and then there are, you know, the dreamers and the schemers. And so sometimes maybe it's expanding your network and looking at some entrepreneurs who maybe aren't good content creators or aren't good at courses, but they're really good at the operations side of things and seeing if, you know, they want to leave their business behind and run things for you.
Yeah. I love that. And I know that's a rare circumstance. I think the majority of the people who are listening to Build Your Tribe are just trying to get out from under the overwhelm. And they just need to make that next hire, that first hire or that next hire. So we've got them writing out a job posting. Now they're getting applicants. What is your process for screening those applicants? Especially if you get like, you know, 50.
Right. Yeah. So the first thing for me is, did they follow the application instructions? If no, it's an automatic rejection. If yes, then we wait till they've all come in and then we take a look at them. And the ones that are, they have the experience and they've at least answered the questions in a way that we like, I always send a follow-up and it's written questions because now I want to see how they do with more of a conversational thing going back and forth. And usually it's a little bit more technical. So again, if I'm hiring for a developer, I'm asking some technical questions.
Okay.
That's going to help me really weed through the people who have the chops and the people who don't. By that point, we've whittled it down to like 8 or 10, and then we're doing interviews.
So you wait until you get all the applicants. Do you pick a date? And is this because it saves you time and keeps you focused? If you're like, okay, I'm going to wait until this date, then we're going to close applications. I've got 50. Now I'm going to send all of my top applicants the same series of questions. So you can, are you doing this all in kind of blocks?
Yeah, we're doing it in blocks. Partly it's just because that's my process and that's how my brain works. But another reason is because there's been times where I sent people follow up early on and then really, really good applications came in later in the process. And then I, you know, I'd kind of like wasted some people's time who maybe wouldn't have moved forward had I had those other applications. And I really do not like to waste candidates' time.
And your own. What's a major red flag other than not following through on the instructions?
There's a couple. So I have definitely had some people just start complaining about their current employer or a client. And, you know, there's the difference between sharing a tricky situation and like actively complaining about a previous client before you have any kind of established relationship.
Now, is this something you're hearing in the interview? Are there red flags that you see on with your applicants, like something, or even in their responses?
Yeah, absolutely. So definitely depends on the position that we're hiring for, right? If I'm hiring for a copywriter and they're filled with maybe grammar or like it's really boring application, then I don't want that. If it's a developer who doesn't seem like they know what they're talking about in the application, that's obviously a red flag. I do think in the interview that it's easier to find red flags. I think this is personal, but if somebody comes to an interview with me and they don't turn on their camera, I just have like a hard time even moving them forward because I want to have some face-to-face and it feels like we're just not able to have that connection and you're probably going to become forgettable to me.
I have found, I don't know if you found this to be true, but I found that a lot of certain countries, they are, I don't know if it's a shyness, but I noticed, especially when I have interviewed people from the Philippines, and not to generalize, but that's been my experience, is they often are like really reluctant, not all, but more reluctant than others to turn their cameras on.
Yeah, I've noticed that as well. And I do think sometimes it's because they're trying to make sure they have the best internet connection. Mm-hmm. So they are at, you know, an internet cafe or something like that. I've seen that happen too. Yeah. Or, you know, maybe their setup, their background isn't great. And so they're not wanting to see that. So, you know, utilize virtual backgrounds and blur it out. but we want to see, we want to have a connection, I think.
And when you are on a Zoom interview, is that your process? So we're talking about doing an interview face to face. What are some other things that are just like red flags?
Instant red flags would be probably talking on and on and on and not being able to filter themselves. Now, obviously, this isn't because everybody has different communication styles, and even like, you know, some people who are very neurodivergent might, you know, have a hard time cutting themselves off. But if I am only able to get through three of my 10 interview questions, that probably tells me that we're going to have a little bit of a tricky time communicating remotely because this person doesn't have a good feel of how to edit themselves.
Mm. What are you picking up on so that you know that this person fits our culture? And I guess even before I ask that question, let me go back and say, how important is it that even someone who's part-time and they're virtual? So, you know, most of our team, I think all of our team for the most part, we work independently. We're in different locations. We're very rarely all together. So why does culture even matter? Why does it even, do I need to worry about whether this person will get along with this person?
I think, especially with a remote team, the culture piece of it is less about who's going to get along with each other because we're not in close proximity with each other. It's who is going to be a team player in the sense of, oh my gosh, this platform just broke. I need five people to help me go in and manually do whatever this task is. And knowing that you have people that you can rely on who are going to respond and be available, we are very respectful, I think, of people's schedules and flexibility and their different hours. But, you know, if we don't hear from you for days and days, then you're probably not a good culture fit because we need to be able to rely on each other and to trust each other. So it's less about personalities with the remote team, and it's more reliability and the ability to adapt and being willing to kind of step outside of your scope sometimes to help the greater good.
Mm. Okay, so when we're crafting our questions for an interview, what are some of the biggest mistakes that people make when they're asking questions of a candidate?
I think too often we just focus on the hard skill type things. Do you have experience doing this? How would you handle this situation? And we forget about the soft skills. And those are things like asking people, what stresses you out? Mm. What did you accomplish in the past year that you're really proud of? Mm. You know, what are the characteristics that your friends and family use to describe you? Those are really, really crucial questions to ask people because you're going to, you know, you want to hire somebody who you're going to be able to stand to be around. And even if they are the most skilled person in the world, if they don't have those soft skills that you're looking for, you're going to have a hard time getting a lot of stuff done.
How do you craft questions that you, because I think when people are sitting down to prepare the questions for their interview, it makes someone, the first time they're doing an interview, really nervous. And they're like, okay, so I'm looking for somebody who's hardworking and a team player. And they often will ask questions that lead the witness. Like, are you a team player? Yes, I am. So how would you phrase a question like that where I'm trying to figure out if they're a team player without letting them know I'm trying to figure this thing out?
Yeah. I think oftentimes you can ask experiential questions. So tell me about a time that you were, you know, working with a larger group and things weren't going well. And, you know, how did you handle it? And what was the end solution or resolution to this? And you're going to be able to then hear if they, you know, I've definitely had people be like, well, I went and told my boss and then we all had to have this group meeting. And, you know, like people are going to kind of sell themselves out and tell you the truth of how they handled that situation. And that's going to let you know, is this person somebody who can pivot and figure it out and be a team player? Or are they going to want to just stick within their scope and go report it to their boss? So situational questions, I think, are often the best way to avoid that leading the witness.
If we've got to make an important hire, it's a big hire. We're going to spend money to get the top candidates. How many times will you interview them?
I typically only do one interview me, but if it's a really big hire, then I'm not the only person who's involved. So I'm probably the front line. Mm-hmm. And then maybe if there's like, let's say it's for a particular business center, then maybe I'm asking the program director to also interview them. And then usually if it's a really big, crucial ROI producing position, we also ask you to do that kind of final interview, vibe them out, see if they are aligned with your vision. And then we're going to do that test project. And those things combined tend to give us the full picture of who that candidate is.
And we use a test project for absolutely every hire, like from the person who's basically only going to do a couple of projects for us to the person who we hope will expand their role and take on more responsibilities and have a bigger future with Team Johnson. Can you explain to people why we use that, how we use it, and why it's so beneficial?
It is so important. I would argue it is the most important part of this process. And we oftentimes will, because these are always paid, we always pay our candidates for their time. And this is for two reasons. One, sometimes we actually have work for them to do and we want to be able to use it if it's really great, right? Yeah. It's super unsavory to ask people to do a free test project and then to use their stuff. So literally, we pay them for their time. And this means you're going to get a really good quality test project that you can sometimes use because you need whatever that thing is. But it also means that you can really test out what it would be like to work with that person. My process for this is I don't want to just give you the project scope and then have you turn it in a week later. I want to work through this with you. I want you to ask me clarifying questions. If I didn't include an asset that you think would be really great, ask me for it. If you get done early enough, send me the draft and I will give you feedback. I want to know what it's like to collaborate and work with you in the long haul. And this test project is the ultimate way to do that.
Are you telling them that in advance, or are you giving, let's say, three people, as we often do, we'll give our top three candidates the same or very similar projects? And are you just sitting back to see which one of these individuals is going to take the initiative to ask for that feedback? Or are you letting them know in advance that they have that permission?
I tell everybody in advance that I want them to treat this like a real working relationship. And Shalene, I cannot tell you how few people take me up on that. And it's really telling, because the amount of people that will turn in their project 30 minutes before it's due kind of tells me what it would probably be like to work with them ultimately.
Yeah, that's great. Okay, so let's give a specific example of maybe the time we hired a blog writer. How do you assign that work?
Yeah, so really what we're going to do is we're going to write as clear and as detailed of a project scope as we possibly can. We want to give them as many resources as we can, set them up for success. So I always do basically like a summary too of like, what overall is this project? What are we looking for? And then I'm going to link as many assets for them as possible. For the blog writer, I'm going to be sending them our brand voice guide, our brand guidelines. I'm going to send them examples that we liked. I'm going to send them examples that we didn't like. I'm going to send them topic ideas. Oftentimes I will even be like, hey, if you really want to set yourself apart, you've got millions of hours of content from Shalene to learn her voice. Here's her podcast. Go ahead and give it a listen and you'll set yourself up for success. Because I want them to be successful. I want to find the right person. So I'm giving them as much as I possibly can in that job scope and then just really being very detailed. I want a 900 word blog article about this topic. Here's some resources you can use to learn about it. It needs to have this CTA. I want you to find three stock images to go with it, whatever it is, but it's going to be really detailed and listed out.
Listen, if you guys are enjoying this, which I know you are, this is incredibly valuable for you. Number one, like, bookmark this episode. If you're watching on YouTube, leave a comment below and let us know how incredibly valuable this information has been from Michelle. I mean, you're getting it spelled out word by word by word. We'd love for you to rate the show too if you're listening on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. Michelle, it's got to be tricky. I know it is. Now I've got to figure out how to pay these three people, these three candidates. I'm going to pay all of them for the same projects. Oh my gosh, this is tricky. How do I pay them so that I'm not setting the bar too high and they think that that's what we're going to be paying ongoing, or too low and they're not interested? And can you help me wrap my head around the idea that the entrepreneur listening right now is like, what? I have to pay three people for the same job? That seems ludicrous.
Right. So obviously, don't pick a crazy assignment, right? Like, don't ask them to rebuild your website, because that is not realistic, and that's going to cost you thousands of dollars. Instead, give them one landing page to redesign. So as far as the price that it goes, we are always very upfront in our job posting about the kind of range that people can expect. Because again, we don't want somebody who is not necessarily skilled to be applying for this job. It's way out of their abilities. We also don't want to go all the way through the process only to find out that somebody's rate is three times higher than what we want to pay. Right. So be upfront in the job posting to begin with. And then kind of take that rate that you have put in the job posting and either ask questions of people who you know who are doing this, or maybe hopefully you know a little bit about the job itself. How many hours would it take somebody to do this job? Estimate. Let's say it's going to take about a skilled person about 10 hours to do this job. Take the kind of lower end of the range that you put on the job posting and then figure out what that rate is going to be. Usually, we are fairly generous, but not crazy with the test project, because exactly what you said is we need to be able to negotiate the best rate for us as the business. And we don't yet know what we're paying for. So you don't want to pay somebody a really high rate of that could end up being really crappy, right? I have never actually had somebody try to negotiate the project rate. They are always happy and excited to take the project rate. There's only been one other time too where we offered different project rates because we had a super, super high person. And then we had more of a mid to lower person. And we wanted to see, you know, how much they could maybe balance each other out. And so we offered different project rates.
Convince me that this is a wise investment, because it feels like I'm triple dipping into my profits if I'm paying for the same project to be done three times, so that I'm comparing apples to apples. Convince me why this is a wise investment.
Well, it costs 40 hours for you to find those three people anyway. So factor in how much you maybe pay yourself, how much your current estimated hourly rate is, and then times that by how many hours you have already spent searching for these candidates. And if you have to do it again because you hired the wrong person because you didn't test them out, that's all the value right there that you have lost, and you are not going to be spending doing the time and the stuff that generates revenue for your business.
And you literally cannot put a price on your peace of mind. Like, when you hire the wrong person, you're stressed, you're going back to the drawing board, it's hard on the rest of the team, it impacts your bottom line, it impacts your creativity, impacts everything. So I think it's probably one of the best decisions you could make. It's a wise, wise investment. And I recommend that everybody follow the advice that Michelle's giving you, and specifically like how to do this. I mean, because your dream, your business is limited by the size of your team. And your team, when it's solid, when it's, you know, working the ways ours is right now, it's just so much more rewarding. Like, it's so fun. I mean, and I'm sure you've been in this situation too, Michelle, where a team just feels really disjointed. It's just, it's hard to describe, but like, you start to question if you're the right person, if you're in the right business, if it's the, you question everything, and it really kills everybody's mojo. But man, when you've got the right people around and you take the time to bring those people on the right way, all the cylinders are firing. It's just, it's amazing.
Yeah, it's totally worth it. I always tell people, like, yeah, you are going to have to invest some time. You're going to have to spend a little bit of time doing this, but each time you do it, you're going to get better. Each time you do it, save your templates, save your questions, make yourself some SOPs as you go along, and it's going to get better and faster. And then hopefully you will have an operator on your team who's going to do those things for you, and it's going to be set up and it's going to be a streamlined process.
Well, Michelle, I want to bring you back and have you walk people through, because this is like step one. It's like finding that person. But I want to bring you back and talk to you about making the offer and then also the onboarding process. Because since you came into our family at Team Johnson, like, every single new person we brought on has said, that was the most remarkable, thorough, enjoyable onboarding experience I've ever had. So I want to break down that secret sauce for people. Make sure that you're subscribed to Build Your Tribe. That way you'll see the next time Michelle's here with us, and we'll break all that down for you, because it does go beyond just like finding the right person.
Yep. You got to nurture that relationship. Take them out on dates.
Michelle, where can people follow you? Where are you most active?
Yeah, I'm most active on Instagram and LinkedIn. I'm just at michelle.puccinelli. It's a strange last name. I'm sure it'll be linked in the show notes.
Oh, one last thing I wanted to ask. What did your students, because you were formerly a high school teacher, correct?
I was, yeah, high school history.
So what did your students call you?
Miss Pooch. I taught German. Miss Pooch, yeah. And I taught German for a year. And so Mrs. in German is Frau. So it was Frau Pooch and then Frau P. And then that sounded like a frappe, like a frappuccino. So by the end, I was frappe.
Oh, wow. That is crazy. Well, thank you so much for sharing your wisdom with everybody here on Build Your Tribe. You're the best. We are so lucky to have you. And literally, like, you've made such a difference in the quality of our team and the culture. And so I can't thank you enough.
Oh, it's an honor. Thanks, Shalene.
It's awesome.